overlay revenues, et cetera. They're used for student centers and student recreation centers, in which case the debt service is paid by the student building fee, which is a component of tuition. The last thing I just wanted to note, though, that although they are not generally used for this purpose, in some cases, Article 11 F1 bonds have been used to finance academic facilities in higher ed, say classrooms, offices, laboratories, that type of thing. And in those cases, tuition revenue is used to pay the debt service. So there are some cases where academic facilities are used, but generally that's not the purpose of these bonds. And finally, each session, the legislature or emergency board approves the use of Article 11 F1 bonds for identified projects. So the use of the bonds is specified by the legislature for how much can be used for which projects. And that would be, for this session, the bill that does that is Senate Bill 5516, the Capital Construction Bill for Higher Ed. So if there aren't any questions about the background, let me talk a little bit about what this bill does. House Bill 2199A, first of all, does not change any of the things that we've just said. So everything that we just said about Article F1 bonds will continue to be the case. But what it does do is it authorizes the state to enter into financial agreements for Article 11 F1 bonds and to use the bond proceeds to make payments that we become obligated under these agreements.
Under what agreements?
These financial agreements that the bill authorizes.
Thank you.
So the bill authorizes these agreements and then says we're able to pledge the Article 11 F1 bond proceeds to make the payments that are due under these agreements. So what are these agreements? What do we mean by financial agreements? Well, the bill defines what financial agreements are, and you can see that on page 1 of the bill, which is in the back here, lines 11 through 13. But I'd like to, instead of going into that definition here, and there are people here in the room who would be much more expert at defining these, explaining these financial agreements than I am, I would just say what the purpose is, the purpose of these agreements, and the reason why the state would choose to enter into them, is to lower debt finance costs. It's to do something that would make the bonds sellable for less financial cost to the state than they otherwise would be. The proposed types of financial agreements would allow debt service payments on a variable rate or synthetic fixed rate basis. Under current law or current practice, I'm not entirely clear if the law prohibits this now or not, but certainly under current practice, all Article 11 F1 bonds are issued on a fixed rate basis where the interest rate is the same for what is often a 30-year term of the bond. This bill would allow higher ed to have more flexibility and to issue bonds with variable rates or synthetic fixed rates. Finally, what is the fiscal impact of this bill? The fiscal impact of the bill is $155,000 in the 07-09 biennium. It would be for the reason for that cost is that OUS would hire an additional person in the chancellor's office to manage these debt instruments. These costs are other fund costs, they're not general fund costs, and revenues to pay for this individual and the associated costs would come from assessments on the Article 11 F1 capital projects themselves. And furthermore, you've already approved this in Senate Bill 5515, that is to say it's in the budget. In that budget, you approved Package 452, which was authority to spend $155,000 and to hire this additional individual. Another aspect of the fiscal impact is the bill is projected, and this is just a projection, to reduce debt service costs by $2 million this biennium. So by being able to issue enter into these financial agreements and issue different types of debt, the state is projected to save $2 million. Amendments to this bill. To our knowledge, the bill is in order. It does not require any amendments. We're not aware of any amendments. And if everything you've heard so far sounds okay to you, it won't need any amendments. But if you need to change anything, we'll have to get some drafting up for you. Any questions? Representative Morgan.
Thank you. Just for my own personal clarification, it sounds to me like really what this does is simply allow higher ed with relation to ex-bond-funded projects to use variable interest rates instead of a regular across-the-board interest rate. And so if they have longer-term debt, they can end up not paying so much interest on it. Am I missing the boat here?
I think you've got the you're not missing the boat at all. I think there are probably additional authorities that would be granted in terms of these finance agreements than simply issuing variable rate debt. And that might be a good thing to try to learn what those exactly are, but that is the primary intent of that. Yes.
Would it be possible, Mr. Chair, for somebody to come forward and talk to us about that?
Yeah, that was certainly the plan. Maybe we can, Senator Devlin.
Yeah. Well, I think it would be helpful. I can put my question on the table, then they can try to answer both of them, actually.
So you have this question.
And that is basically, I would assume that if we were going to use variable, although this is not like personal residential side, there would be parameters on this, and in most cases, the bonds would be callable. So.
Well, Mr. Green and
Ms. Lockwood McCall.
Ms. Lockwood McCall.
Good afternoon. I'll begin if that's okay.
Thank you very much.
For the chair, my name is Laura Lockwood McCall. I'm the Director of Debt Management in the State Treasurer's Office. Would you like me to answer Representative Morgan's question first or Senator Devlin's question?
Perhaps Representative Morgan, since hers was first.
Okay. The bill does a couple of things. Indeed, it allows a variety of different tools and techniques in terms of using variable rate debt, both public debt that is in a variable rate mode, but also lines and letters of credit with banking institutions. In order to allow maximum flexibility, the university system will have a lot of different types of projects and different stages of planning and completion. Sometimes they need to buy land, and they're not sure how the buildings will be used. So we'll want to give them a lot of different tools in their toolkit. And in all cases, obviously, variable rate is easily callable. So that sort of somewhat answers Senator Devlin's question. But it also allows us to enter into interest rate swaps, which all state agencies already have the authority under Chapter 286. However, there's a clarification as to making the payments if you choose to end those agreements. And so this legislation makes it very clear so bond counsel can give very clean opinions that indeed they have the authority under state law to do that. So why would you do that? Well, you may enter into a variable rate mode because interest rates are low and it's a good thing to do at the time. And if interest rates are moving up, you could swap back into a fixed rate. You may also issue initially in variable rate and swap it immediately into fixed rate and end up at a lower cost if you just sold plain old vanilla fixed rate debt. So our goal is to give them all the tools that they need, like other state agencies have begun to use, Oregon Housing, Oregon Department of Transportation, Oregon Veterans and Services, Administration, so they can, in general, manage their debt portfolios as cost-effectively as possible.
Thank you very much. I think Senator Morse, did you have a question?
Yes, I did. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Under Section 2, lines 14 and 15, the State of Oregon acting through the State Board of Higher Education or the State Treasurer. My question has to do with who's on first and who's on second. Since we're adding a staff person to OUS, what role does the Treasurer's Office play and who decides what role each of them will play?
I will start and I'll see what higher ed says through the chair, Senator Morse. Under state law, the legislature has tasked the State Treasurer's Office with playing a central debt management coordination role. We also have been tasked with setting up a statewide swap policy. So to that end, we have standards and policies so that before any agency could enter into an interest rate swap, they have the training and they have the staffing in place because they're the ones who are going to have to manage these affairs on an ongoing basis. And we don't want to have agencies get involved in something that they couldn't manage. So we set up a master memorandum of understanding between ourselves and them based on this policy, and then we work together to execute these transactions. But we would work hand in hand with OUS, as we do now, to sell bonds as well as to enter into financial agreements. So I don't think it would change. We just have the staff that we need on their side to be able to really manage these more sophisticated financial instruments.
Thank you.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's interesting to note that the question that Senator Morris asked was precisely the one that the Revenue Committee had after reviewing the initial amendments. The answer that we got was the same, and that was the question I was going to ask.
Last years, the great minds think alike. Representative Morgan, did you
know? I was just wondering if the Chancellor's office had anything to add to it.
Actually, Mr. Green has signed up, so at this time, if that would work for you, Mr. Green?
Great. Chair Belizio, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Michael Green. I'm the Associate Vice Chancellor for Finance Administration and Controller for the Oregon University System. I have prepared the testimony that you have in front of you. I have prepared a commentary to go through. Actually, you've already discussed much of what I was going to say. I guess in looking through what I was going to talk about, I would briefly, number one, want to inform you that 2199A resulted from a meeting between the University System, the State Treasurer's Office, DAS, Department of Justice, and the OUS Bond Council, as well as OUS's financial advisors and bond underwriters, held at the request of Ms. Lockwood to discuss potential cost savings in other financing alternatives. So I want to give credit to the State Treasurer's Office for leading us in the path of lower costs. So thank you very much for that. And I guess the one other thing I would say is that one of the things that would raise a question in my mind is safeguards over these kind of transactions. And I wanted to highlight that, of course, these transactions would be approved by the State Treasurer's Office and entered into under the authority of the State Treasurer's Office with bond council review. And also that our higher ed board scrutinizes our debt transactions every time that an institution wants to enter into a debt transaction to construct or renovate an auxiliary enterprise activity such as housing, food service, others, they must submit a financial pro forma to the Board of Higher Education for review to ensure that that project is financially viable. And we also have financial advisors that advise us on these transactions so that, that we can make sure that when we enter into these transactions, we've considered the interest rate environment and other considerations that we need to do. So, with that, I think that my testimony has kind of been covered already.
Thank you, Mr. Green. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You raised an additional question, but I think your testimony gives the answer already. But this is not one of those accounts for which the interest is paid into the general fund or retained in the account. Isn't that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, that's correct. The auxiliary enterprise activities, with the exception of some of the student fee-funded activities and intercollegiate athletics, which generally doesn't run much of a balance, are not are interest-bearing to the general fund, not to the university system. That's correct.
Thank you. Let me clarify that, if I may.
Clarification.
But the funds that you're talking about here retain that interest, don't they? I'm getting a head nod from the Chancellor, so.
The bond funds?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, you're talking about the bond proceeds and the debt service?
Correct.
Funds? That's correct, they do.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative.
Representative Senator Morse.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Typically, what would be the spread between G bonds and F bonds in interest cost?
Through the chair, Senator Morris, they're general obligation bonds of the state. The fact that we have the enterprise underneath as sort of a double barrel doesn't really matter to the market. So whatever interest rate we got in 11G general fund, we get, because the general fund is our best pledge. So there isn't a spread. It's general obligation bonds that we sell for VETS, energy, they all will get the same rate any given day in the market.
So the same, essentially the interest rate is the same.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Thank you. Further questions, Representative Barnhart?
Thank you. Just to finish the thought, my understanding is that from the bondholder's point of view, these are general obligation bonds, subject to the full faith and credit of the state, wherever we can scrape up money. Internally, these are revenue bonds in the sense that the enterprise that is benefiting is supposed to pay the cost.
Through the chairs. That's correct. And to that end, in the debt capacity studies that we do for the state, we exclude the GO bonds that are 11F from the analysis because we make sure that the revenues within the enterprise and the auxiliary is sufficient to cover all the debt service costs. And so there is no drain on the general fund. And the rating agencies see that as well. They don't consider the net tax-supported debt even. But we get the benefit of the general obligation underlying full faith and credit when we go out in the bond market.
Thank you.
If you have something,
if I may simply add, absolutely. During the 60s, when my father was in charge of the housing office at the University of Oregon, they built a large number of dormitories. One of the reasons why we have maintenance problems at universities is that that was the period when we built most of our buildings. I can recall as a child, as a high school student and younger, him talking around the dinner table about the need to maintain the balances in the bonding accounts, what he called the bonds and interest accounts, in order to cover these costs. And it's the same description then as it is now. We're simply talking about a new wrinkle for how to reduce interest rates.
Thank you, Representative. Fascinating conversation at the Barnard dinner table. Well, how old were you? 6 years old when you were talking about that?
No, I probably was 12 or 13.
All right. Incredible. All right. Further, any other questions?
Mr. Chair, I find it interesting that it's called the Higher Education Bond Sinking Fund. And that's what we've been doing in higher education, is sinking.
That stands on its own. I don't even need to comment. So, all right. Well, thank you both for taking the time and explaining to us further. Appreciate that. Mr. Vice Chair.
Motion.
Chair would entertain us.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, wait. Chair hasn't even opened up a work session. I apologize. Okay. Closing the public hearing on 2199A, opening up a work session on 2199A, recognizing Senator Devlin.
Mr. Chairman, move House Bill 2199A to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Devlin has moved 2199A. To the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussions? Representative Morgan.
Just very briefly, Mr. Chair, this I think is the kind of thing that we're doing a very good job in moving through the system. This is a great example of government working the way that it should and come up with an efficiency that's going to benefit the system and benefit the state. So thank you very much for doing this.
Thank you, Representative. Any other discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, motion carries. And I guess I can do carriers. Representative Morgan, would you carry this to the House and coming to the floor?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Great. Does anyone over in?
It serves on revenue. That guy.
Senator Decker will carry it to the Senate.
Yeah, especially since he's not here.
Very good.
In the House floor as well. Okay. All right. With that, I'm closing the work session on 2199A. And I'm opening up a work session on, opening up a public hearing on House Bill 2801A relating to stem cell research. Okay, and I'm going to turn over to Legislative Fiscal Steve Bunder, and then we have one of the chief co-sponsors, our colleague, Representative Mitch Greenlick, will be up first, and then we will proceed from there. So, Mr. Bunder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The material on House Bill 2801 distributed by LFO is the material with the buff-colored sheet on the top page, and this contains, in this case, a two-page summary of what this bill does. It includes the staff measure summary from the committee that this bill comes to you from, the House Committee on Health Care, and then it includes the actual bill language itself. This is a bill that's relating to stem cell research, and if I can briefly go through the material on the buff-colored sheet and point out a couple of changes, actually. This explains the background, what the bill does, and what the proposed amendments to this bill were due, and the proposed amendments have not been distributed to you yet. The background is dealing with stem cells. Are that, first of all, what stem cells are, they are cells that possess the ability to develop into a variety of cell types and are the focus of major research efforts to develop new treatments and cures for diseases and new treatments for injuries. The research for stem cells is primarily funded by federal and private grant funds. The federal government restricts federal funding for embryonic stem cell research to certain pre-existing stem cell lines. Some other states provide funding for human stem cell research to supplement this funding from federal and private sources. Oregon does not have such a program. What House Bill 2801, as it comes to you, engrossed would do is the following. First of all, it would prohibit using human eggs or sperm that are donated for assisted reproduction from being used to create stem cells for research purposes without donor consent. And it imposes a civil penalty of up to $10,000 for each violation of this. The bill also creates the Human Stem Cell Research Committee, which, to shorten things, I'm going to be calling the committee, in the Department of Human Services, and it specifies the membership. The membership of the committee, which we can look at in some detail, is held by scientists and ethicists and others. It directs the Department of Human Services to provide administrative support to this committee. House Bill 2108 also authorizes this committee to do certain things. There are basically three major things that this committee will do. First of all, it will develop guidelines for human stem cell research in Oregon. The bill requires that the committee develop these guidelines by January 1 of next year, and that it report these guidelines to you, the legislature, to the governor, and to Oregon Health Sciences University. My reading of the bill is that these guidelines do not have effect. They are, in essence, suggestions, and that it would be up to the legislature to pass law changes, if the guidelines would require them, up for the governor to promote rule changes if rule changes are needed to implement these guidelines. But the guidelines would not become self-operating. They would be a recommendation that would be reported to these three entities. Another thing that this bill does is it authorizes the committee to develop recommendations about the nature of and method for providing informed consent to human stem cell research, and to report these recommendations by January 1, 2009. And similarly, these recommendations are recommendations, and they will be implemented either by the governor, the legislature, or whoever would be required, depending on what the recommendations are. Finally, what this committee would do is it would administer a grant program to award money for human stem cell research projects. The committee, it is also authorized to solicit donations from public and private sources to fund and support these grants. And the final item here that I've listed is that it establishes the Human Stem Cell Research Grant Fund. These are things that Ways and Means we get very interested in with these funds, for receipt and distribution of funds for purposes of funding the grant program and other committee activities. So this is the actual establishment of a mechanism for transferring and expending these funds. If I may ask you to flip over to the back of page of the buff-colored sheet, there's something labeled the House Bill 2801-A8 Amendments. You will not be getting -A8 amendments. They did not come back in order, and we now have -A9 amendments, which when you start discussing, I just want to look them over and see if they're what we asked for, and if they all will distribute those. But this is what we asked for, essentially, amendments to do the following. First, the amendments delete references to therapeutic cloning in the bill. Therapeutic cloning was used primarily as a definition in the bill and was not in the active portions of the bill. It didn't specifically require or prohibit therapeutic cloning. It was just a definition that was used. Another thing that these amendments would do is they would delay the deadline for the guidelines report that we spoke of earlier, that in the bill is due January 1st, to April 1st, 2009. The primary reason for this delay is, I think the chair would mention, he has been working to reduce the fiscal impact of this bill, and by delaying some of these requirements, that was possible.
And if I can, but also the other reason to delay it was the committee is going to be coming up with recommendations, kind of looking at the ethics and, you know, their purpose, and so it just, it looks at a realistic timeline to do that as well, but it's also in terms of the fiscal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. The amendments also would make changes to lengths of initial terms for members appointed to the committee. They are four-year terms, but in order to establish a rotation so they all expire all at the same time. There were some changes that were made to those, which we can get into if you're interested. The amendments would also delay the deadline for the report on informed consent, also to April 1st, 2009. The amendments would delay the start of the grant program until the 09-11 biennium. So there would be no grants awarded for stem cell research in 07-09 under the amendments. At the same time, the bill delays as well until the 09-11 biennium. The ban on using donated eggs and sperm without donor consent for stem cell research and the civil penalties. The next two are very technical requests that LFO asked to be drafted. One of them is to exclude the bill as it came before you, allows general fund to go into this grant fund, consistent with what the co-chairs have asked for all funds that are being established. The amendments would exclude general fund appropriations from the grant fund. I would note that this does not prevent the legislature from appropriating general fund for human stem cell research. That is not the effect of this. The effect is to maintain the status of any general fund that you did appropriate for this purpose as general fund, so that you would retain interest earnings on these appropriations, and so that if any of the monies were unused because they were not awarded, they would revert to the general fund at the end of the biennium, just as every other general fund appropriation reverts if it's not spent. Another technical change is that we changed the continuous appropriation to the department instead of the committee, because we always appropriate to departments. Getting now to, again, some other changes. We're now at about a little more than halfway down this. The amendments would restrict the grant fund to supporting research conducted in Oregon. There was an error in this bill in that the research could be funded occurring anywhere, but the intent was that the research on these grants would be funded here, and this would be conducted here in the state. The amendments would allow the committee to retain a portion of funds that are donated for administrative expenses, and would allow program administration to be fully funded from donations after initial startup funding in the 07-09 biennium, at least potentially. And then finally, what the amendments would do is they would appropriate general fund. They would add an actual general fund appropriation, which is not in the bill now. The amount would be $159,366, and what it would be for administration. It would not be for any grants, for research grants. This would fund two positions in the Department of Human Services and some associated costs for doing the things that the committee is responsible for doing on, you know, the three bullets on the first page. So this would be the administrative support to cover those costs. Finally, the last two bullet items, to clarify. Again, no general fund is being appropriated for research grants, and the committee would not be authorized to award any grants of any private funds it receives prior to July 1 of 09. This bill establishes a mechanism where this committee can receive both general fund and private funds and award and
establish a grant program for stem cell research conducted in Oregon. And again, in this biennium, there will be no general fund. That could be done in the future or not, depending on what the legislature decides. And in this biennium, even private funds would not be used for grants. We would be able to collect them, but they couldn't be actually awarded until after July 1, 2009. The final change would be an emergency clause. The emergency clause would make the bill effective July 1, 2007. This is done because all bills that appropriate general fund or that establish special limitations, such as all your budget bills, all have emergency clauses, as these actions relate to the entire biennium period. So you want it to become effective at the start of the biennium. As I said, the Dash 8 amendments are not the ones. These will actually hopefully be the Dash 9s. I will be looking over these and seeing if these look okay, and so we can actually distribute them. But I think it may be helpful for the committee to hear from Representative Greenlick and others about the bill and about their interest in it.
Okay. And speaking of colleagues, speaking of Representative Greenlick, Representative Greenlick is the chief co-sponsor of the bill along with the chair, and I appreciate your patience and you being here and considering the time. Would welcome your comments on House Bill 2801A. Of course, the bill came through Representative Greenlick's health care committee, and I don't know how many hearings you had on that, but if you could talk about that and then anything else you care to say. Representative Greenlick.
Thank you. I'm State Representative Mitch Green, House Issue 33. I just assume this is a part of the pre-signed I-Party activity, so it's the beginning of my celebration tonight. Happy to be here. Thank you very much for hearing this bill, Mr. Chair and committee members. I think this is a very important bill. We did, as you say, have several hearings in our committee and several work sessions, a lot of invited testimony. It's a bill that engenders a great deal of acrimony and a great deal of enthusiasm both. So there's heat and light that both emerge and emerge very regularly in our hearings and in our work sessions. The researchers we talk to that are really cutting edge researchers at OHSU and feel that they're trying to compete in a modern world with one arm tied behind their back without the ability or the encouragement of the legislature to move into various elements of stem cell research that are critical to hope we'll have the disease, the breakthroughs in the disease that are most likely amenable to a variety of stem cell researches. And I do want to make clear the amendments that we pass in the committee and that will be the substantive part of the Dash 1 rather than the fiscal, I mean the Dash 9s rather than the fiscal part of the Dash 9s, do two things. They make it clear that we're not only talking about embryonic stem cell research, although we are talking about that. We're talking about the full range of stem cell research. And some of you may have seen the newspaper article recently speculating on the extent to which skin cells may serve some functions of stem cells in a variety of ways. And we're not talking about cloning sheep or human beings. We have no need to clone Representative Galizio, for example, for any purposes. We have enough of him. And the measures really point out that human cloning and the things that go around that are a violation of current state policy, and that's not what we're talking about. What we are talking about here is giving the researchers at OHSU, OSU, and other institutions in Oregon the encouragement to move the level of research in this area to the next level or to the next level after that. There's great hope in the world and that this area of research, this line of studies, can provide experimental results that will help fight Alzheimer's, that will help fight muscular dystrophy, that will help fight a lot of the really critical chronic illnesses that we deal with now, and that this line of research is one of the most important sets of arrows in our quiver as we attack this area. We've been able, because of the Oregon Opportunity Funds, to bring some extraordinary researchers to OHSU, and we've now moved. I say we, as you know, I'm a past department chair at OHSU, and so an adjunct faculty member there. We're very proud of the way we've moved ahead in a whole set of new research areas, and we think this bill is very important to help us propel us to the next level of development. We heard from a great many investigators how this is important. I also do want to note that VHS is supportive. I have in my file here a letter from them. As long as they get the funding they need, they think this is a great idea, and they're very supportive of it, and we'll be working with the researchers to move that committee process. That committee process is important because we do need to make sure that we have the ethical issues in line. There are very delicate ethical issues around all sorts of stem cell research, as there are around other areas of research, and we've been involved in helping them. For example, in the genetic research area, we've been very helpful as a legislature in creating the kind of structure and the kind of guidelines to move that research forward. This is the next example where we think this is important. I support the bill. It's obvious, but we've worked very hard on it in the healthcare committee, and it comes to you, we think, pretty thoroughly vetted from the health policy side. Thank you for hearing. I'll be available for any questions.
Thank you, Representative Greenleck. I appreciate you coming out. Are there any questions? Senator Morse.
I'm curious. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your comments. The origin of the -8s, is this consistent with the work?
The -8s? I don't have -8s. The last I have is -7s. And the substantive part, the deletion of the terms therapeutic cloning, actually we had three amendments before us in the committee. We accepted two of them, and we didn't accept this one. We should have accepted this one. That was my error as chair, and I think this makes up for that. It takes out some of the more fiery language that probably doesn't need to be there, but I definitely support the substantive part of the -9s. I haven't seen the other parts, but the notion of both the time delay and the deletion of the therapeutic cloning terms, which I think are in the -9s, I think I heard you say that, are very consistent with the hearings we heard, and I do support them.
Thank you, Senator. Representative Morgan?
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Greenleck, for coming before us. This is not something that I know a lot about. This is a very new thing. How do you get how do these stem cells come into being? Talk to me about the process here.
Well, there are a variety of kinds of stem cells. The very notion of a stem cell is a cell that we first encounter in an embryo, and it's sort of the basic building block of the rest of our organs. Stem cells have the capability of becoming brain cells and heart cells and nerve cells and a variety of other cells. So they're the first place in the natural process we find them is in embryos. But we find other cells around the body, and a lot of the research up till now has been in non-embryonic stem cells from adult beings that come in a variety of places that have the potential. The addition here of the embryonic stem cell comes one of the ways they come is that in the fertility development process, donors create a set of ova, and then they have sperm, and they somewhere along the line fertilize the ova, some of the ova that are donated, and they become they implant them in the fertility process, but there are lots of ova left over. One of the processes, one of the kinds of stem cell research we have, would allow the donors of those ova to in an informed consent process to allow them to be used in research. Much the same way that, say, we allow our bodies on death to be used for research, or that a parent, say, will allow a child's organs of a child body to be used both for donors and for research purposes, and it's an analogous situation to that. So that for embryonic stem cell research, one of the kinds of research that we're talking about here, it would be the donors of the ova that would allow those to be used to harvest stem cells from.
So can I just clarify?
Yeah.
So what you're doing then is taking human eggs and human sperm and fertilizing the egg and then allowing that to develop to some stage?
No, it's the opposite of that. It's ones that aren't used to be fertilized for implantation, to use the ova that have been donated, usually around 5 days or something after they've been donated. It's generally the non-fertilized ova that the stem cells come from. Known as, if I can remember the term, I can't remember the term. It's in the bill, I think.
What was the...
I'm sorry, what was
the... Yeah, I wasn't paying attention.
Someone's away.
Well, that's one of them, yeah. Yeah, it's a part of the somatic cell nuclear transfer process. We have an expert behind us, I think.
Yeah.
I'm in the water this deep right now, so I want to try and keep my nose above it in terms of the technicalities of the research.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, as much as, we're putting you in a difficult position, because obviously the purview of this committee is primarily, we're looking at the fiscal. I mean, you've been through all these hearings, and you've gotten so much information, so, but, Representative Morgan?
Well, I don't want to belabor the issue, because this is not a policy committee, but the moral and the ethical implications of this, I think, are huge, and it's an area that, quite frankly, I feel very uncomfortable in.
And I think that's the purpose of setting up the research committee, so we have bioethicists.
This is a difficult issue. This is not a simple issue, and we struggled with it mightily in the committee and came up with what we thought was the best compromise in the way to move forward. It's a legitimate concern. And that is the point of the committee, to try and help us work our way through. There'll be ethicists on that committee, as well as scientists who know what they're talking about, as I don't in this area.
May I ask you
something? Sure.
So you have an unfertilized human egg, and then is it only the cells that are inside of that egg that you're working with?
That's correct.
So you must need some large amount of eggs to be able to do anything.
Well, again, I'm not under oath here, right? I can make this go along. There are ways, beginning with those stem cells, to reproduce them. So it's not that you harvest millions of them, and I think there are ways when the stem cells, once harvested, can be reproduced and are reproduced.
I had a question I wanted to ask you. So I'm looking at the NCSL National Conference of State Legislatures, and in 2004, voters in California passed Proposition 71, which authorized the issuance of $3 billion, with a B. I wish Dennis Richardson were here. $3 billion in bonds, not to exceed the sale of over $350 million per year, to support stem cell research. In 2005, The Connecticut legislature provided $10 million. Indiana created a stem cell research center at Indiana University. Actually, we already have a stem cell research center at Oregon Health Sciences University. Maryland created a stem cell research fund, millions of dollars. And I just read that Eliot Spitzer, the governor of New York, received legislative approval for $600 million for stem cell research. So I guess my question is...
Missouri as well.
And Missouri, yeah, I mean, I'm just...
An initiative to,
right.
As well.
So I guess my question is, when we're looking at the fiscal here, where we're just setting up a committee to explore the process, and then we couldn't even do anything in terms of real investment until 2009. Are you satisfied with this, and you still support this bill? It's a very conservative step, I would say.
But,
what's that?
I said much rather have $3 million, but the fact that I am satisfied. I think Representative Morgan raised the issues that we discussed. There are a variety of touchy issues here. And I think moving a policy forward and then letting a committee made up of scientists and bioethicists who really know what's going on establish the ethical and scientific guidelines, I think, is an extremely useful process. And, and you know, there still may be changes at the federal level. Right now, we've been working only with, I think, 45 stem cell lines, some number like that, a limited number of stem cell lines, and that's really where we've pushed that about as far as we can push that.
Are there any theologians on this committee?
The committee has to be named? Well, frequently medical ethicists are theologians at the same time, but it doesn't specifically specify theologians. It says two medical ethicists. And, for example, Professor Garland, who was my colleague, had his doctoral degree in theology and was probably one of the two leading medical ethicists in the state. I think that's the type of person. So frequently theologists become ethicists as a piece of their... In fact, we had some wonderful testimony from a professor of theology, testimony against the bill, a very interesting testimony from a theologist from somewhere back east. As Representative Jensen referred to, a place where the salt air comes off the Atlantic right
now. A little different. Senator Dublin.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to state that, you know, I understand that there are very significant ethical and moral issues, and this is not fighting all of this keyboard, but there were significant issues there too. As I spent one interim, and in some way I'm still a liaison to that committee, on a committee that rewrote the genetic privacy rules or laws for the state of Oregon, and we got into a lot of discussions in terms of the ethical use of information and the potential. Of course, when you talk about DNA, you start raising a lot of concerns in people. But I think part of understanding some of these moral and ethical concerns is putting together a group of people like this so that you get them fully explored, so that if you do have to do anything from a statutory standpoint, that the legislature has good information to act upon.
Thank you, Senator Dublin. I think that's exactly the purpose of creating this committee. So, any other questions, Representative Greenlee? Because we do have some folks on the list, but Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to confirm the legislature's role in this process. Once the committee has assembled and come up with recommendations, what is the legislature's charge at that point?
Yes. Well, I... Chair Galizzi, Representative Edwards, I think the staff pointed out that once the committee comes up with recommendations, there are two ways that those recommendations can be implemented. One would be in rules implemented by DHS, and the other would be in legislative action. My guess is we'll get this back in the legislature. We'll be dealing with it in the next session. And I think the time frame of the report is... Well, I think it's July of 2009. I think a rational committee will give it to us so we can deal with it in the 2009 legislature, if that's the way it goes. And that's my guess, that we'll hear it again.
Representative Edwards.
So just to confirm, and there'll be some legislative oversight before any of the monies in the fund are expended. who have an opportunity to weigh in on the recommendations prior to it.
They won't be able to expend any funds, even private funds,
right,
until essentially the end of the 09 legislative session.
Okay.
So that gives us a chance to deal with it after it's been examined.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Edwards. Thank you very much, Representative Greenlick. Really appreciate it.
I'll hang around in case you want me to make any other answers.
That's great. That's great. I appreciate it. I wanted to call up Patty O'Sullivan from the Department of Human Services, and we've been working with DHS to try to solidify the structure and the implementation, and I think it would be valuable to have Ms. O'Sullivan.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Patricia O'Sullivan. I'm the Director of Public Policy and Government Relations for the Department of Human Services. And I have been working with Representative Galizio and did have a meeting with counsel and LFO to answer any questions. I know nothing about stem cell research, so I can't answer any of those questions, but I have been working with them on effective dates and how this would roll out in a more bureaucratic administrative way. And so we delayed some of the implementation dates because the money would not be there for the grants, so you wouldn't need that staff for the grant program until that second biennia, and what levels the staff would be and what they would be funded at. And that's what we've talked about and worked on, and just how this is all constructed. So, for we are very supportive of this, and we're ready to take it on if the committee so chooses to fund it.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for Ms. O'Sullivan? I'm sorry I used your nickname, your first name. I didn't call you Patricia.
Oh, you call me Patio?
Yes.
Oh, well, that's
my name.
Yeah, that's okay.
I'm too informed. Are there any questions about the role of DHS? Great. Can we? I was going to ask you a really complicated question about stem cell research.
I couldn't even say the words in the definition, so I figure I'm not working on this committee.
Thank you for being here.
Sure. Would you like me to stay?
Or? If you could, just in case something comes up, if you're able.
No problem.
Okay. Also like to call up Elise Brown.
Chair Galizio and members of the committee, Elise Brown representing American Diabetes Association. And we also appreciate Representative Greenlick's leadership in bringing the bill forward in the first place, and your willingness to hear this today. Representative Greenlick mentioned a couple of the beneficiaries of stem cell research, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes is another one. And for us, it's pretty simple. It's a cure. For type 1 diabetes, stem cell research would lead us to a cure.
I don't know what else to say.
And diabetes, as you know, is one of the fastest growing diseases across the country. And as you're considering some of the potential costs of 2801, I would like to have you keep these statistics in mind today. Every 21 seconds, somebody is diagnosed with diabetes. So that is 4,110 people a day and about 1.5 million a year. So what does that mean for Oregon? Currently, there are nearly 200,000 diagnosed with diabetes in Oregon today. There is 65,000 that have undiagnosed diabetes. So those are the folks that are waiting and visiting their doctors on a regular basis who could be diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. Over 500 people have pre-diabetes. So that adds up to $1.7 billion that Oregon spends on diabetes-related complications a year. So for these reasons, the American Diabetes Association and the 200,000 people that are diagnosed with diabetes today are here to say, please consider this an opportunity for leadership. There are 10 other states across the country that are looking at similar legislation like this, and we will hope that you all will consider this the opportunity to move forward, play a leader in the research field, and consider passage of 2801. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Representative Morgan.
So of the initiatives that the chair discussed from the funding for, are any of those involved in this type of research?
Are you asking me about Alzheimer's and Parkinson's
now? No, I'm asking you specifically about therapeutic cloning or whatever this is called, human stem cell research.
I guess, I'm sorry, Representative Morgan, I'm not understanding what the question
is. What I'm curious about is where the research is. I don't see a link between this science and diabetes, but that's only because I know nothing about this field at all. And I'm curious to know what kind of research projects are going on around trying to find a cure for diabetes as it relates to this type of stem cell research. Research and where that is on a national or international scale.
We provided testimony to that effect earlier in the policy committee, and I'm happy to provide you with that information. One of the things that that diabetics rely greatly on with stem cell research, talking about adult stem cells and embryonic stem cells, help lead to the cure for type 1 diabetes, as I mentioned, and it also helps lead to better outcomes for those that are going to get type 2 diabetes. So I'm not clarifying the question very well for you, but I do have some statistical information that I'm happy to give you offline.
So, if I might just clarify further, can you outline to me any kind of successes that have been realized through this research?
As in how many lives being saved, or I guess what I'm saying is that...
Well, in therapy applications.
I don't have that information with me at this moment.
Thank you.
I'm happy to get that for you, Bill.
Okay, I would be interested in seeing it if you would be so kind.
Are there any other questions?
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it. I'm not a research scientist, but just from the research that I've done and listening to some of the scientists and the researchers in the hearings, the whole field of what some call regenerative medicine is sort of what we're talking about here. And I mean, there's the understanding part of it. Just this type of work and research is leading to better understanding at the cellular level. But then beyond that, when you get to sort of the application, and I think we are largely at the point where we're talking about potential, but an exciting potential. And so, I don't think it's, you can say, this already happened. Although at Oregon Health Sciences University, there was a story where young child who had Batten's disease, but it looks like Representative Greenleaf's coming up here. He could probably give more of a scientific. Yes.
Sprinting.
That's right.
Representative Greenleaf. To Representative Norman's question, if I may.
Please.
All of those states, the new programs that he mentioned, include both embryonic and adult stem cell research.
Yeah, that's true.
So the expansion, the adult stem cell research has been going on. And since we've not been doing much in the way of embryonic stem cell research, most of the therapeutic advances so far have come out of adult stem cell. We heard significant testimony about a variety of diseases that were cured. People brought their cases in. There was one gentleman, for example, who reported that adult stem cell research allowed his treatment with myelodysplasia, which included a stem cell transplant, putting new stem cells into his body to allow them to grow. Now, those were adult stem cells because that's all we've been able to research on at the moment in Oregon. So there have been a series of very spectacular cures from adult stem cells, but the adult stem cell research says that they're basically at the end of the line, and they need to generate their research using embryonic stem cell research and some of these other techniques.
What's the difference between adult stem cell and embryonic stem cell?
Adult stem cells are
a certain kind of stem cells that can be literally taken from adults, from us. I mean, for example, it turns out, although I don't know how far this has gone, we got a report in the newspapers 2 weeks ago that certain types of skin cells can be used as stem cells and can be used to treat, to go into the body to replace existing cells, so that the defective cells can be replaced by new cells that are generated out of the stem cell. Stem cells, remember, have this plasticity characteristic, the characteristic to become other kinds of cells. And that's what's so important about them. So that in a, let's say, muscular dystrophy patient where a set of nerve cells have been destroyed, and I assume that's what it is, the hope is that with embryonic stem cell research, we can be transplanting embryonic cells that have the potential to repair the cells that have become defective. And that's what the notion of this research is.
And if I may, too, Chair, I do have a couple of definitions here that are scientific. The difference, adult stem cell, as Representative Greenlich just said, are found in different tissues of the body, such as blood, skin, or muscle, and they renew itself. And the embryonic stem cell, the value in that one is the self-renewal, and the multiplication happens faster. So that's why those cells are more valuable for the research. Again, all stem cells are valuable, but embryonic is the one that is the most valuable. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Senator Saar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a clarification of a comment that I think Representative Greenlich made, and to me it was new information. I believe I heard you say that embryonic stem cell research today is not allowed or against the law.
It isn't against the law. It's that federal funding, which has been a big piece of this, are only allowed on a limited set of existing stem cell lines. As I was saying before, stem cells can be reproduced, and there are a set of existing stem cell lines that can be funded under NIH research, but there isn't any funding because the NIH policy doesn't allow any NIH funding for research beyond those established lines. I think there are 45 lines, I think is the number that I remember.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Stark,
follow up. There's no limitation, statutory or otherwise, on private sector investment, grants, philanthropic organizations, universities, spending private dollars on embryonic stem cell research.
I believe that's correct.
So what I would submit is that...
I think it's correct.
What I would submit is, you know, is based on the statement you made about the federal restriction and the whole ethical issue and dilemma I think that policymakers have had across the country, and this particular one I may not be replicated on this committee, maybe not in the policymakers in this building. But the question is, using public tax dollars on embryonic stem cell research when that's the goal, that's the crux of what you're trying to do. There's no limit on having the private side do this research with private dollars, but in the end, what you really want to do is you want to take my neighbor's dollars, taxpayer dollars, and do things with embryos that a lot of people find very, very unethical. That's the bottom line, correct?
Well, I think that might be considered one of the bottom lines, as other states have already done exactly that. But I think the more important question is the analogous situation with the genetic privacy question, and that's the important thing, I think, here, and certainly the important thing in the next 2 years, is to deal with creating ethical sideboards around what kind of research should be done, at least in the public institutions in Oregon.
Thank you, Judge. Just to follow up on that particular issue, how much research is currently being done in embryonic stem cell research that's privately funded at OHSU?
I think the answer is none. There is a lot of research
at OHSU that can qualify that or?
That's what's great about this building. We actually happen to have someone right here sitting in the corner. Don't you wish your life was always like that? You just get in an argument with your friend and, hey, I just happen to have the research scientist from Oregon Health Sciences.
Steps off and
that's what I was thinking of.
Members of the committee, Brian Behringer from OHSU for the record, not a stem cell scientist, so let me qualify that. And happy to get information from our folks and bring information in. I believe Representative Greenlick is correct, though, on embryonic stem cell research. We do have some fetal stem cell research that's privately funded, but I do not believe that we have any embryonic stem cell research. But I can double check that and make sure that that's accurate.
Fetal meaning?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it's a different a way of collecting the stem cells. I'd have to get that information for you, but I believe it's different from stem cell embryonic stem cell research. But I really am in the deep end of the pool and would rather get this from our scientists for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Are you talking? And you're talking about like primate center too, right? They're animal.
Yeah, I'm Mr. Chair. I was not including any animal model stuff. I'm just talking about embryonic. And what I was referring to was that Batten's study that you had mentioned earlier. But I really need to get this checked for you.
Good questions. Thank you, Senator Starr. So we have about 10 more minutes, and I have a couple more folks who are here who I want to give an opportunity. So thank you all very much. I'd like to call up. Oh, yes, Senator Moore.
Before the panel.
Oh, please. Sorry.
If I may very quickly. Yeah. I'm a bit confused because, on the one hand, the AM Ghost version that we have in the summary says requires committee to develop guidelines for research involving derivation or use of human embryonic stem cells. And then the effect of the committee amendment that references this AM Ghost version says deletes all embryonic references in the major. And
yes, I can comment on that.
Yeah.
We wanted to make sure, and that's why it was the dash ones and the dash twos that eliminated the specific term embryonic, because we wanted to make sure that the concept was we're talking about all kinds of research, including embryonic, but not limited to embryonic. So embryonic, fetal, adult, a whole set of stem cells. So we just deleted the original term embryonic to make sure we were talking about the full scope of
it. So it was more inclusive, and so it wasn't so narrowly defined as just doing that, because as has been said, there are myriad, a lot of research in diverse areas of regenerative medicine. One type is embryonic, but there are also adult stem cells, so it wanted to be more inclusive, a broader language, so that when they're applying, if this passes and we go on and they're grant funding, it's not just narrowly tailored to one type of stem cell research, but it includes that type. So I don't want to...
Well, thank you very much. Well, that's very helpful. But what I see this bill doing is it just formalizes the debate in a hopefully a more thoughtful way, to be inclusive of all of the issues, and the ethical issues, the science issues, the benefit issues, challenging this whole issue of stem cells, where they come from and how they're used, in a way that will give us guidance and a forum for public debate in the future about what we're going to do for the policy of the state of Oregon.
Am I correct?
Yeah, I hope there'll be somebody sitting here in the 09 session that handles these questions with a lot more skill and knowledge than I'm handling.
No, but that's
a public health guy.
This is a major purpose. This is a major purpose, because we're not going to solve this in an hour and a half. Yes, Senator.
Sorry, no, we're not going to solve it in an hour and a half, but I would submit, Representative Senator Morris, that this bill does what you say, but it does something in addition to that. It presupposes the answer. Because this bill creates a committee to have that discussion, but also creates a grant fund, assuming that you're going to have an outcome. So it presupposes an outcome. So if we had a committee, if we had a bill to set up a committee to hash out these issues and come up with a policy, and then set in the next legislative session, legislative assembly, to take that result and then do something with it, this bill does both. That's the problem I have with this bill particularly, is the presupposing the outcome. You're going to have a grant fund of some kind. And also, from my perspective, not precluding the opportunity on the embryonic side, which we haven't fully fleshed out what's available on the adult stem cell side first. And you know, if you want to build it, can pass unanimously, do that. If you want to be inclusive and not divisive, do that. But this bill divides. It's as clearly as indicated by the vote out of the House committee.
Thank you, Senator. Steve Bender has to leave, so but I wanted to make one final comment, and then I'm going to ask Tootie Smith and Elizabeth, is it Spillman? If you could come up after. So, Mr. Bender.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I just did want to mention to you that we have distributed to you the -A9 amendments. The -A9 amendments are consistent with the description here where it says -A8 amendments, but these do conform to this description here. So, and they are in order if this is what we choose to adopt.
Okay.
They will work.
Yeah. Anyway. Okay. Thank you very much. Good afternoon, and I'm sorry we're got about 6 minutes.
Great. I'm Tootie Smith, representing the Oregon Family Council. I am not exactly sure what these amendments do, but for the record, I'll go on and say what I think this bill does. At Oregon Family Council, we oppose embryonic stem cell research. We are wholly in favor, however, of adult stem cell research, recognizing there are already identified 220 adult stem cells, and that almost 70 cures have been derived from that. Using the placenta for stem cell research is acceptable, as well as the umbilical cord. The reason you do not support embryonic stem cell research because it creates a human life and then kills it for the experimentation of possible benefit of scientific research. The funding mechanism is rather a problem in that the general funds could go into this bill to create what we consider human cloning. On page 3 of the A engrossed House bill, section 3, line 15, states the guidelines shall address state policy promoting research involving the derivation of human stem cells by any method, including somatic cell nuclear transfer. That is human cloning. That's what it is. You guys need to get out your books or whatever. We can provide you information with that. We are against human cloning for the purpose of killing that human clone and then taking it apart and using it for experiments. There are currently, you know, our position on this, if this is such a good deal to clone humans and use embryos, more private laboratories in the United States would be funding this. I think that the OHSU can continue in stem cell research without this bill, without funding from the state, and even without the committee. The guidelines that are going to be presented, I think, needs to be a committee that is fully balanced, not just with blinders for the proponents who want to see this, but as Representative Morgan alluded to, pure ethicists in the area. The term therapeutic cloning has been taken out, but I believe the reproductive cloning has been left in. There really is just a mix of words. We feel, based on our research, that they're one and the same. This bill is a human cloning bill, and that's why we strongly oppose it. Like I say, I think OHSU and other universities across the United States have done a remarkable job in adult stem cell research, and we favor that. I think OHSU could be, breaking edge in their scientific research, but to actually create an embryo, which an embryo is a fertilized egg, extracting out the nucleus, putting a new nucleus in, and that kills it, and then zapping it with electricity, and then killing it in another 5 days, we just don't feel that is ethical or moral. Do we have any questions for me?
Thank you very much, Ms. Spillman.
Okay. Yes, Chair Galicia, members of the committee. My name is Elizabeth Spillman, and I am the Assistant Legislative Director for Oregon Right to Life. And we also oppose House Bill 2801. I have some more lengthy written testimony here that I can submit to you, but because of time constraints, I'd just like to address a couple issues. We do wholeheartedly support adult stem cell research. However, we do oppose embryonic stem cell research and cloning, which, as was mentioned before, is included in this bill under the guise of somatic cell nuclear transfer, and that is addressed in the written testimony that I had to kind of explain the how cloning and somatic cell nuclear transfer are basically the same thing. We oppose House Bill 2801 because it promotes the creation and destruction of human embryos for research purposes. We believe the state should not be spending its limited resources on a practice that is considered unethical and immoral by hundreds of thousands of Oregonians. Furthermore, the state's money is better spent only on adult stem cell research, which has no moral and ethical concerns because it does not harm the research subject in any way. It also has been shown successful. There are treatments and cures and clinical trials already in existence for over 72 diseases and conditions from adult stem cells, and embryonic stem cells to date are still in the animal testing stage. They have not resulted in treatments, cures for anything, any person, or any clinical trials whatsoever. In conclusion, I would like to mention that this bill is unnecessary because embryonic stem cell research and cloning are completely legal here in Oregon and everywhere else in the United States, and it is being conducted as we speak using private donations, as was mentioned before. Senator Starr was completely correct in that that is happening. And finally, we believe that because of the moral and ethical concerns that have been mentioned that surround embryonic stem cell research and cloning, that is in the best interest of the state to stay away, stay as a neutral observer, and not get involved in something that has so many moral and ethical and religious concerns for so many people. So that is about it. And also, I wanted to mention, too, that I know that you all are primarily concerned with the fiscal impact of the bill, but I would just like to submit that it is definitely important for you all to understand exactly what embryonic stem cell research and cloning do, because you will be authorizing the move forward, which does authorize state funds for that. And so we believe that it's important for you to understand the specifics of that so your decision is fully informed about what this does.
Thank you very much, Ms. Spillman and Ms. Smith. Really appreciate you taking the time to testify on this bill. Thank you very much.
Would you like our testimony?
Written testimony?
Yes.
Sure. Thank you. Okay. All right. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing, and I'm going to open up a work session on House Bill 2801A, and we'll take a motion on the dash nine
A9.
A9 amendment to House Bill 2801.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Morse.
I move the dash A9 amendments to House Bill 2801.
Senator Morse has moved the dash A9 amendments to House Bill 2801. Discussion.
If I may.
Senator Morse.
I'm very sensitive to the issues that have been raised, but as I read this bill, I don't see a predisposition to advancing embryonic or human cloning. What I see is that there's a requirement that we as a state need to consider the ethical issues and balance those with the research, the potential research and the scientific advances, and come up with guidelines that in fact do address the ethical considerations. And I believe that this discussion needs to find a very keen focus and have conclusions that are in fact brought back to the legislative assembly with respect to what shall be the policy of the state with respect to the use of public funds. That's what I see in this bill. I don't see a predisposition or an authorization for embryonic or cloning. research, what I see is let's have a thoughtful discussion and develop the guidelines.
Thank you, Senator Morse. Another discussion. Are there objections? Oh, I'm sorry. Discussion?
I am not real sure where I fall in this whole arena. And I appreciate Senator Morris's statement. Part of the problem, you know, I guess, with it is it seemed that most of the testimony, pro and con, seemed to be kind of focused on the policy issue, the policy surrounding this, including the ethics and so forth, rather than discussion on the money and where it's coming from with it. I'm going to vote no on this at this time, Mr. Chair. It's a strange statement to make, but also reserve the right, both in full and on the floor, to vote yes, depending on what else I'm able to determine by the time that it arrives in those places, in the event that it does.
Thank you, Representative Jensen. Any other comments? So I see objections from you want to comment? Or?
No, I'll comment on
that. Okay.
Can we just take a roll call?
Yeah, can we do a roll call vote? Thank you, Representative Senator Walker.
What is the motion?
So the motion is to adopt the A9 to 2801, the amendments.
Senator Morse?
Aye.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Senator Deckard?
Aye.
Senator Starr?
No.
Representative Morgan?
No.
Representative Jensen?
No.
Representative Edwards?
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Chair Galizio?
Aye.
So the A9 amendments are adopted. Motion carries.
Chair, I move House Bill 2801 as amended to the full committee. A voice made for the due process recommendation.
Senator Morse has moved House Bill 2801A, A9, to the floor with the due, or
as amended.
2801
as amended.
2801A
as amended.
2801A as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Discussion.
Can we have staff give us an analysis of the A?
Yeah, discussion?
Yes, Senator Starr,
please. Thank you. Again, with all due respect to Senator Morris, I read this very differently. This legislative assembly has had opportunities to move things in a bipartisan basis where you can get Republicans and Democrats to vote yes, and this is an opportunity to do that. Instead, what I see is particularly the majority party, though these issues aren't obviously partisan, Senator Morris and I are in the same party, but you could do this in a way that would be inclusive. And where you'd likely get a unanimous vote on the House and Senate floor, and you could go forward and potentially do something terrific for the state of Oregon. And all you have to do is just eliminate embryonic stem cell research out of this whole process. It's an issue that raises unbelievably complex issues that you have very strong feelings, both religious and ethical and other things. That's point number one. Point number two is I would go back to what I said before. I disagree that this is just setting up a committee to study this stuff. This bill not only sets up a committee to study it, but it also presupposes that you're gonna have a grant program and you're gonna issue grants under Section 4 and Section 5 of the bill. Though the -9 pushed the fiscal impact out, like this legislature has done on other issues, so we don't have to deal with the money this time. Goodness gracious, can't spend the money today. Let's let the next legislative assembly deal with the money. But this bill sets up a process for grant writing, grant applications, and a process to distribute grants. So I would suggest that this does do that. It's more than just studying the issues. It's frustrating for me that we don't have a bill that will pass 60 and 30 and have a governor's signature. Instead, we want to divide Oregonians. You want my pro-life constituents to help fund this program that have very strong feelings about embryonic stem cell research and the structure of human life. That's frustrating. And, you know, this debate kind of dovetails in the whole abortion funding debate. And, you know, as a state, we've funded abortions publicly with public dollars for a number of years, and that's another issue. But this issue dovetails into that. Apparently, we have so much money that we can take money out of pro-life Oregonians' pockets to fund things that they find abhorrent, and that's frustrating to me. We don't have to do that. There's so much opportunities with stem cell research that universally is accepted, but instead we decide to divide Oregonians.
Thank you, Senator Starr.
Other comments? Representative Morgan.
I very much appreciate Senator Starr's comments on this. I think it definitely is the embryonic stem cell aspect to this that is very, very troubling to me. I also, in my reading of the bill, clearly see that this will be implemented if the legislature chooses not to act. The research fund will be in place, the policies will be in place, all of this essentially requires a report to the legislature, but it doesn't require the legislature to take any action to have it all happen. And that's very troubling to me. And I have real questions about the ethics and the morality around embryonic stem cell research. I think that adult stem cell research is very acceptable and has a proven track record, but in the form of this bill, I think it has a preordained outcome, and it's not something I can support.
Thank you, Representative Morgan. Further discussion?
Just as the chief co-sponsor of the bill, I appreciate the sensitivity of the topic. I think Representative Greenlake also agreed that it is a very, it can be a divisive topic. I can say that we on the House side, we worked very hard to try to get a bill that was bipartisan and where you could have people agree. In fact, there were several amendments and changes made. But there are some times where there are just basic policy differences. And I respect your view. I just disagree with it. And it's not the goal is not to be divisive. My goal in bringing forth this bill was to invest in research that, according to the research scientists, the experts, shows some great promise for devastating diseases. And so I guarantee you the goal was not to be divisive. I mean, that wasn't the purpose. To eliminate embryonic stem cell research would be completely the antithesis of the scientific process. If the research finds that it's problematic and not garnering positive results, then so be it. But we're not the first people to wrestle with this issue either. I mean, this has been, and it will continue. All kind of scientific research will be. So the purpose is not to be divisive. And yes, the reason to set up a funding mechanism is my hope is that the Stem Cell Research Committee will come up with guidelines that are then acceptable and that we can start investing in this research like many other states already are. Maybe we can begin to have the type of public health policy that is useful for the state of Oregon and perhaps saves the lives or improves the lives of millions of people. So that's the hope. But it was never intended to be divisive. That's not the purpose. So anyway, with that, can we do a roll call vote on the motion to move House Bill 2801A as amended with a due pass recommendation to the full committee?
Senator Morse?
Aye.
Senator Starr?
Aye.
Senator Greenlake?
Aye.
Senator Starr?
Aye.
Senator Morgan?
Aye.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Senator Decker?
Aye.
Senator Starr?
No.
Vice Chair Devlin?
Aye.
Representative Morgan?
No.
Representative Jensen?
No.
Representative Edwards?
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Chair Galizio?
Aye. Chair votes aye. Motion carries. And the chair will carry to the House and the full. And on the Senate side. Do I have to walk over to the Senate and carry it myself?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm happy to carry it.
Senator Walker? All right, Senator Walker will carry it over. Thank you all very much. With that, closing the work session on 2801, and we are adjourned.